Hello, everyone. I'm Bill Roggio. I'm a senior fellow at Foundation for Defense of Democracies and editor of FDD's Lone War Journal. This is Generation Jihad, the podcast that covers all things in what used to be known as the global war on terror, but we now call the Long War. Monday, of course, my co-host is my friend and colleague at FDD and at the Lone War Journal, Joe Truesman. Joe is a senior research analyst at FDD's Lone War Journal, where he focuses primarily on Palestinian terror groups, Hezbollah, and all things happening in the region. Joe, great to be back. I had a little vacation, I guess you would call it, last week. And many thanks to you and Benham for carrying the load here at Generation Jihad.
Yeah, Bill, sorry I missed you, but I think things turned out pretty well, not having you there for at least a few days, but happy you're back.
Yeah, you know, and I always joke that not only are these terrorists and terror-sponsoring states evil, but they're inconsiderate, of course. You know, Israel, yeah. Iran launches an attack on Israel as I'm driving to my location. I just, you know, shaking my head, talking to my wife, going, I could have planned this one. So, but let's get into it. A lot for me to catch up on. I know you're up to date, Joe.
Right.
Over the weekend, I guess that would be on the 19th. I guess it'd be Friday. The Israelis launched their response to Iran's missile rocket drone attack that was the week prior. Joe, I'm still reading and trying to figure out what the Israelis did and what the impact was. What happened? Tell us.
Right. So there's a lot of different varying reports, right? It just depends who you listen
You'll
to.
You say that. I don't even know if it was a drone attack, yeah. If it was a missile attack. Was it? I am still scratching my head on this one.
Right. I think we can say that at least a military site was attacked. You know, some reports say that it was a radar site or a site that belonged to, that protects one of Iran's nuclear facilities. And that it was attacked with a drone or a fighter jet. And then there's, again, the various reports, what kind of weapons was used, right? Some say it's a special ballistic missile, an air-launched ballistic missile. Anyway, I do think something was hit. All right.
Yeah, that seems clear. It does seem like something was hit. It's just, in this day and age, the leaks and, as it's happening reporting, this is just shocking that we are still scratching our heads at this one.
I know, right? It's pretty interesting, especially, you know, the open source information that's available. You can nowadays, which is super interesting, is that generally you can tell when something is happening just by, you know, when I say open source, I mean, it could be anything, right? It's like Twitter, for example, and you can, you know, certain feeds start popping up and, you know, in the claims, you start seeing claims. Anyway, you can tell almost in real time, especially when Iran attacked the Israelis, it was almost in real time. You could see everything happening and then you see the videos. And anyway, something sort of similar happened with when the Israelis attacked Iran and started seeing reports about explosions in southern Syria, for example, and that a certain radar sites were taken out, which kind of makes sense, really, because, you know, if the Israelis don't want the Iranians or any other foe to see them coming, well, they'll probably take out a radar site. They've done this before. They did it. They've done it when they've attacked IRGC targets in Syria and Hezbollah targets in Syria. What the Israelis would do, they take out certain radar sites, and then several days later, they'd come in and hit whatever they're looking for in the area, right? So I wasn't surprised by this. So nevertheless, something was hit. And I think it was a radar site, just because there's open source information that shows like satellite images. And I'm not one of those satellite images guys, but you can tell something happened there. So there was a response, but here's the interesting issue is that most people thought it was going to be something, you know, big, right? I mean, Iran attacked Israel with all these ballistic missiles and drones. So many people expected Israel to reciprocate, but it doesn't seem like they did, right? So it seems like there was just one site, this area that was attacked. And instead of using a lot of force here, maybe it was just more of a message, right? And we can blame a lot of things. You can say the Biden administration was telling the Israelis not to attack Iran in a significant way. Perhaps the Israelis are actually also tied with Hezbollah in Gaza. So the Israelis are fighting a multi-front war. So I'm not sure, even if they wanted to hit Iran hard, I'm not sure if that would have been the wise idea right now, right? Right now, because they're in a multi-front war already. So it's tough to say, but nevertheless, that's the gist. That's what's happened here. Something was hit, probably a radar site, and that was protecting one of the nuclear facilities. And I guess it was more of a message to the Iranians that, hey, you know, when we want to go after your nuke facilities, we can hit your radar sites and you won't see us coming. I think that was the message more than anything here.
I concur, Joe. So the radar site that we believe that was hit in the town city of Isfahan, right? And we correct, know yes. that the Iranians, they have experimental nuclear reactors there, uranium conversion facility. So this is part of Iran's nuclear program. If this is a message, which I actually suspect is correct here, then the message is, we could take out your radar site and then we could follow on with attacks on your nuclear facilities. Now, the problem is the Israelis can't successfully conduct meaningful attacks inside of Iran to disable Iran's nuclear facilities in total without support, significant support from the United States. Probably would need support from, at the very least, Saudi Arabia as well. It's got long legs for those Israeli aircraft to get back and forth. And then, Israel would be expending a lot of its missile capabilities as well, strategic capabilities. So, yeah, that's what it appears. I guess the question is, was this sufficient? Is this the right response? Now, the Iranians haven't responded. The Iranians seem to have downplayed this attack significantly. And the Iranians do not like attacks on their soil. That is the one thing. This whole exchange, I'm going to just take a step back because as analysts, as people who watch this, we should admit when we're wrong. And I think I did not expect this response, or I'm sorry, the Iranian response. What I had thought the Iranians would do, it escalate along the peripheries, perhaps hit, Israeli diplomatic facilities, up attacks from the from its proxies, Hezbollah, from Houthis, Iraqi and Shia militias, things of that nature. And my thought process on that is that the Iranians would fear a response that from Israel that would receive support from Israel, from the United States. But I think my misread here was the Iranians were going to have actually calculated that the U.S. would be a restraining influence here. And I definitely think that this, this was as restrained a response as possible. And you're right, Joe. They're fighting they're fighting a front on two wars, or I would argue three. And we'll talk about the West Bank further on in the episode. We could argue that the Israelis accomplished with a handful of missiles what the Iranians couldn't accomplish with, over 300 missiles and drones, right? And there may be validity to that argument. However, is that how the Iranians interpreted it? Just as I, didn't get that, predict what the proper Iranian response, or I misread what the Iranians were thinking, is it possible that we're misreading, or people who are making that argument, misreading how the Iranians interpreted it? But what we do know is that as of today, that it seems like we've had a tit and a four-tat here, and things have settled back in to its own pace. Now, the question is, going forward, are the Israelis going to go after high-level IRGC members in Syria and in Lebanon and in other countries? That certainly remains to be seen. I think what may have, been the so-called red line here is that the attack occurred either near or in, and this is another, right? Do we even know where that Iranian general, was he killed in the consulate? Was he killed in an annex to the consulate? Was it across the street? We don't really know, but the Iranians themselves certainly, laid down the gauntlet and said that was a bridge too far and conducted their attack on Israel. I do think the Israelis, if I'm in the Middle East and I'm looking at this exchange that was what happened, what I see isn't I would interpret that as a weak response by the Israelis. But, and Joe, you said it, they're fighting a multi-front war here. And it is difficult for them to bring the Iranians into the fray at this point, even though the Iranians are already fighting Israel and conducting attacks daily via their proxies.
Right. No, you got it right, Bill. It's all the way I see it is it's just how the Iranians interpret things, right? So, obviously the strike on if you want to call it a consulate in Damascus, whatever, that was a red line for them. But I think they took into consideration that Israel, when responding against Israel, took into consideration, well, look, Israel's in a multi-front war right now. We could take advantage of this. Let's exploit it and attack, right? And say that, or demonstrate that what they did, at least in our eyes, is a red line. So, and that's why they responded the way they did. And I think they did identify correctly, as you said before, that the Biden administration would restrain the Israelis. And they probably, and the Biden administration, I think they did. Were there some concessions? You know, maybe, hey, you know, Israel, listen, this worked out. Look, we, you know, you came out of this, you know, with barely any damage, right, from the Iranian response. You know, like Biden said, take the win. I think that's what he told Netanyahu. So they may have said, you know, listen, we may green light. It's okay for you to go into Rafah, right? Who knows? Who knows what other concessions may have been talked about if the Israelis kind of, you know, don't respond in a fierce way. So fiercely, rather. So I don't know. But nevertheless, it kind of was a weak response, right? There was a lot of downplaying by the Iranians, even making fun of the Israelis at times, and just because of the weak response. So, but nevertheless, I think for now, Israel and Iran won't be going to war, at least directly, right? We still have the issues with the proxies, of course. But I don't think the Israelis are going to stop in Syria. I really don't think that's good. But I think they may be more careful, right? But as far as attacking RGC generals or RGC members in Syria, I think that's a different ballgame. I think the Israelis will continue that because they are a threat. They are, the RGC is funneling weapons to Hezbollah, and I think that'll continue.
Yeah, and I expect a lot more of those meetings to occur in consulates and embassies.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, because that does seem to be a deterrent. You know, there's one more factor here I wanted to, before we discuss the next topic, Joe. You know, from it wasn't just the Israelis that shot down those missiles and drones. It was the British, it was the Americans, and even the Jordanians who were all involved. You know, a significant amount of air defense missiles were used. What, you know, I can't sit here and tell you what the stockpiles are, but I do know that the U.S. and Britain are currently involved in shooting down drones and cruise missiles and anti-ship missiles in due to a Houthi attacks in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. So, you know, for those who are saying, oh, the Israelis, you know, they successfully, well, that was day one. But if the Iranians wanted to continue, what would happen day two? What would happen day three? You know, stockpile, you know, even as the Israelis are shooting down Hezbollah drones and rockets and missiles from the north. And by the way, Hezbollah did launch attacks at the same time, and even continuing to shoot down rockets that are being launched from Gaza. So there's no infinite supply of these weapon systems to take down missiles. That's just another concern here. So, you know, those who are saying, you know, a near 100% success rate, which it wasn't, but it was pretty damn close. You can do that on day one and day two and possibly day three and day four. But what happens, you know, as these conflicts progress, what would have happened if the Iranians continued to attack? That would have been certainly interesting to see. But then, of course, we would have had a more aggressive Israeli response as well, possibly with the U.S. support, but possibly not. And that's, you know, so there's a lot of unknowns that still exist here. What we saw is just sort of a quick snapshot, and it definitely wasn't, I don't think this is what a full out war between Israel and Iran would look like, but hopefully we don't find out.
Yeah. That's the scary part. There was barely any Hezbollah activity. So imagine all the ballistic missiles and drones being fired by Iran and at the same time by Hezbollah. It would have been crazy. That's a snapshot. Like you're saying, sort of a scenario that will very likely happen. Will likely happen if there's a war between the two actors. So, or three actors, nevertheless. Yeah.
Yeah, it's again, hopefully it doesn't come to this. It's really odd because Iran and Israel are at war. It's just a proxy war at the moment. But we do hope it doesn't widen because, you know, all bets are off at that stage. And if I'm the Israelis, I'm extremely concerned about the Biden administration's level of support. But over the weekend, another fog of war happened, and it's just getting more and more frustrating to cover these things. there were reports of an attack on an Iranian-backed militia outside of Baghdad, a large explosion. There was reports that 8 militia members were either killed and then they were wounded, and we don't know. We saw images of a large crater. And then last night, there was a report that Hezbollah Brigade launched attacks, rocket or missile attacks on U.S. forces based in Syria. Hezbollah Brigades, or Kataib Hezbollah, is obviously one of the more powerful and influential Iranian-backed militias. But we don't even know if that happened. And by the way, the Biden administration and the U.S. military aren't going to promote that. The attacks have supposedly stopped since February. I've heard reports, unconfirmed reports, of there being sporadic attacks because the U.S. Wants to keep a lid on that problem as well. Do we know what happened this weekend, Joe? Was there did someone bomb a militia base in Iraq, and then did the militias respond by attacking to the U.S.?
Right. This is interesting. At first, it looked like it was bombed, right? But then, if I read correctly, a technical team went out to the base. It was the Kalsu base. I don't know. Have you ever heard that?
I haven't. No,
you haven't. Okay. Anyways, it used to be like a forward operating base for either the United States or U.S.-led coalition. Anyway, it was being used by popular mobilization forces. And probably, and just everybody else, the other Iraqi militias. Anyway, something obviously went boom there, right? And it was pretty spectacular. This wasn't anything small. There were injuries, reportedly at least one death, but that, who knows for sure. And then, interestingly, you saw this, this technical team that reportedly went out there and really couldn't find evidence. And then one of the Iraqi militia leaders, or maybe it was the PMF leader, went out there and found like the debris that could have belonged to a missile or shrapnel. Anyway, but there's nothing, but none of the groups that I've observed have really said this is the United States that did it, even though, by the way, the United States denied being involved. And then it's very confusing. Then Hezbollah Brigades allegedly says, we're published a report saying they're resuming attacks on the United States. But I don't, at this moment, I'm not sure if that's true, because just because there's there's open source channels, there's open source evidence that suggests quite the opposite, that the PMF, Hezbollah Brigades published a statement saying we didn't say that we're resuming attacks on the United States. So anything reported, because it was initially reported by Reuters, what the reports in Reuters is untrue, what they said. So I don't know. And then we hear a base that was attacked just either today or yesterday, an American base. I'm not sure if it was in Syria or Iraq, but so fog of war, right? A lot of, I don't know what's going on here. So it's all very strange. So I don't think any of the militias have said, yes, it's definitely Israel, or something official, right? That they all stand by, that it was Israel that bombed it. And we know that Israel has 100 reasons why they should bomb whatever they bombed, and the United States too, right? So it's tough to say, but yeah, like you said before, I don't think the United States would be involved here, because they've done everything they can to
de-escalate. That's the word of the year.
De-escalate. So if something happened there from a foreign actor, I totally would think it's Israel, right? But I can't say that, I can't prove it. So nevertheless, something happened, but it's just, we don't know how. It's just, you hear one thing, then you hear something else. It's very difficult to say. But I know for a fact that the United States does not want anything to do with the militias are, having those attacks resume against them. That's for sure.
Yeah, here's I believe it was the Iraqi military issued this statement, according to the report I'm looking at. It's a quote, the Air Defense Command report confirmed through technical efforts and radar detection that there were no drone or fighter jets in the airspace of Babil, which is a province in south of Baghdad, before and during the explosion, end quote. So the Iraqi military is denying it. I even saw a report from someone, I can't remember who the reporter or what the outlet was, where Israeli officials denied. I think when we were chatting over the weekend, my suspicion was that there was some type of possible, you know, work accident or detonation, because when I saw the picture, it was a very large crater. So it didn't look like some type of, say, small, you know, a first person view drone or something like that, but, or even like a Hellfire type missile. Like it had to be a, having been on the scene of some very, the aftermath of very large attacks, that, that crater looked to be large. My guess, if it wasn't a Israel or the US, because who else is going to do it, frankly? And the US is openly denying it, then it, my guess is something large just happened to that was in storage, blew up somehow, some way. And that this stuff does happen. So
it does. It does. So, I mean, maybe the Islamic State, I mean, they do still operate in Iraq, but
no claim, right? Yeah, a couple days just, out, they certainly would have claimed that.
Yeah. So I doubt it. Yeah. But anyway, so that's what it is. It's all confusing and the, he said, she said kind of thing. So we don't know right now, really. But something definitely happened.
Yeah. This, and, you know, look, I hate to do episodes of what the hell happened here. Right. We don't really know, but we don't. And these are, as wars like this go on, you get a lot of rumors floating around. Everyone's looking for things that they expect to happen. They expect militias to launch attacks on the U.S. or, and so something goes bump in the night. And, you know, you, especially on Twitter, boy. Everything, I'm sorry, especially on X, dating myself here, you know, everyone is quick to jump that it's the, you know, the next Armageddon is occurring. So it's sort of a caution to just, you know, in these type of wars, I'm just sort of sitting back and just waiting for this information to sort out. And, it's not a popular position to take these days though, Joe. But let's move on. Everyone's familiar with the, you know, the two major fronts the Israelis are fighting, obviously in Gaza with against Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad and other groups. And then there's the, you know, the northern front with Hezbollah. But we've had, you know, the West Bank. This is the one we talked about this at the very beginning, Joe, and can continue. What is going on? The West Bank is the real powder keg that we're just waiting for something to happen. And over the weekend, there's some significant activity. Tell us what happened and what are the implications.
Right. So, you know, it's not just over the weekend. It's been, but it's been a lot over the last few weeks, few months. And then, I mean, this goes back again to 2021. But yeah, it's also, it's tough to sort out, but I'll just say this. So I say in the last couple of months, I'd say what concerns me the most is that since the beginning of, so when, right around when Ramadan started, right before that, actually. So the Israelis, they stopped somebody. They eliminated a would-be suicide bomber, okay, and in the West Bank. And that, you know, it's not, it's rare, but it does happen, okay? So one time it happened. So we saw it happen just you know, last month. So, okay. But then there were more, right? There were another one happened in, I think it was in Jericho. There was a, they stopped a cell that was planning a bombing attack. So, okay. So I start seeing this pattern beginning. And then on April 7th, I believe, a shooting attack occurred in the West Bank. I can't remember. I think it's Kalkilia, but I can't remember exactly. But anyway, a shooting attack happened and two people were injured. Palestinian terrorist shot two people. And in his car, I don't believe they caught him, but in his car was a large bomb. Okay. And okay. So another incident involving explosive. And yesterday Hamas published a statement and video claiming responsibility for that April 7th shooting. And this is very interesting is that, the whole event, the shooting attack, was being live streamed, okay, to somebody, okay, because they had a camera on the shooter, they had a camera inside the car, and they specifically said camera inside the car bomb, all right, and you can see that when the guy carries out the attack, a little bit afterwards, the camera inside the vehicle shows the troops coming in, troops parking right beside the car, walking around, you know, running around, and while Hamas didn't say it, I suspect that car bomb was supposed to go off when those troops arrived. That's what makes sense to me, but it didn't go off. Maybe there was a technical reason, who knows. Anyways, subsequently the IDF destroyed that vehicle. my sense is that now we're seeing this gradual escalation. It's been so small, like it's taken a long period of time, right? In 2021, it started with guns, right? A little bit of IDs. And then as 2022, 2023, we started seeing a lot more explosives involved, a lot more IDs, a lot more explosives buried under the road, and better coordination between the organizations in the West Bank. And of course, they expanded their footprint in different areas of the Northern West Bank. And now what I'm seeing more is this attempts to use car bombs, right? Or suicide bombings, which is really scary type of stuff. And, you know, one day I'm afraid they're going to be successful. They were almost successful this April 7th one. And for whatever reason, you know, it didn't go off, but it could have been a mass casualty event. And a lot of this is being fueled by or supported by Iran. And they haven't been shy about saying that. They're supporting with these groups with funds and transferring arms, smuggling arms, and taking advantage of criminal elements in Israel, right? And who have stolen guns from IDF bases. So there's a lot going on there, and it's a powder keg. It really is. I'm just waiting for that one day for something to happen. It's a daily thing. I can't stress that enough. This is daily. Crazy stuff is going on there as far as shootings or like what I just described. So eventually the Israelis are going to have to turn to the West Bank when they're done with Gaza. I'm sorry. And I've been saying this for a long time now, because these daily operations that they're doing, their counterterrorism operations, it's just managing. Eventually they're going to have to do it, because the Palestinian authorities, they ain't doing as nearly as much as they should. They'll do some raids against some Islamic Jihad guys and maybe Hamas, but at the end of the day, it's not nearly enough to stop these guys. And so it's forcing the Israelis to do something, but that's not even enough too. Israelis, I think they're afraid to go in there for several reasons. When I say afraid, I'm more like concerned, because you know they're already tied in with, you know, Gaza, Lebanon, and other arenas. And if a major military operation in the West Bank, they're under enough pressure already, the Israelis, right? A major military operation in the West Bank, it isn't going to happen anytime soon, I think. And I think we're going to continue seeing these acts of terrorism, unfortunately. And probably, I don't think the Israelis will be compelled to do anything major until, or rather, I don't think the Israelis will do anything major in the West Bank as far as a broad operation until they're compelled to do it. And what I mean by compelled is a major terrorist attack happens, right? And that's what happens a lot, October 7th, for example.
Yeah, when you say the Israelis are afraid to light the match, I think is or to be perceived to light the match, and I really think that's what's going on. This is the one, you know, given how, you know, there's Israeli portions of the West Bank, and there's, you know, there's enclaves of each. This is the one that really has to be a nightmare for Israeli security forces, because, and for Israeli citizens that are there as well, is how can they effectively secure that patchwork of, you know, Israeli and Palestinian communities. Having driven through there once, I said I would not like to have to manage that security situation. It is an absolute nightmare. Joe, Jordan, there has been a lot of concern about Jordan's role in this war. The Jordanians did help Israel beat back the attack from Iranian missiles. However, the Jordanian, the king and queen have been very, particularly Queen Rana, have been very critical of Israel and its fight against Hamas. But now we have Iraqi based militias threatening to, well, tell us about it. What are they saying? And what is the threat here? What is the implications if they follow through on what they're claiming?
Yeah, so we've talked about, you know, Iran and their proxies many times. But you know, like I've said it, Iran is they identify weak points, weak spots in the region, weak governance. And I think they see that in Jordan. You know, there's a huge Palestinian population there, and it obviously supports Hamas and other Palestinian terrorist organizations. I mean, we saw it during Ramadan, especially where there's daily protests near the Israeli embassy in Amman, calling for a peace treaty between Jordan and Israel to be nullified essentially, and of course a lot of support for the groups, the terrorist groups, right? Palestinian terrorist groups. So I think Iran, through its militias, the Iraqi militias, are somewhat, you know, kind of flexing their muscles and attempting to subvert or undermine Jordan's security, right? Now, what I mean by that is that there's been, I think, credible reporting of Iran using Jordan as a way, as a means to smuggle arms to Palestinian terrorist groups in the West Bank. You know, and some of them advanced arms, like, you know, stuff you don't see in the West Bank, RPGs, Claymore mines and different types of mines and other weapons, right? But also, I think this is very interesting, is that, and we covered it on a piece in Long War Journal recently, is that Iraqi militias are trying to foment violence in Jordan against the Israelis, right? So one of the militia leaders, Abu al-Askari, you know, he published a statement saying, we'll arm Jordanians, right? We have the weapons. We can arm Jordanians to fight the Israelis. And, you know, that was kind of, that was interesting, right, for him to say that, because I think he was taking, exploiting what was happening in Jordan at the time, what is happening in Jordan with the huge popular support of Palestinians right now, and especially in Gaza and the West, and for those in the West Bank. So I think he was, you know, taking advantage of that. So he made that statement: we can arm the Islamic resistance in Jordan, which there's no established Islamic resistance in Jordan that I've ever heard of. Obviously, there's one in Iraq. Obviously, there's one in Lebanon, but not in Jordan. Nevertheless, he published a statement that they have the means to do it, and I think that's a big red. That's a red flag, right? An interesting report is that also, and we wrote about it in Long War Journal just a few days ago, is that the Jordanians have been thwarting attempts by Iraqi militias to infiltrate Jordan. Now, what specifically were they trying to do in Jordan? It's not so certain, right? So nevertheless, there's something going on there. The Iranians are trying something in Jordan. It's huge, because listen, you know, the Iraqi militias can arm thousands of Jordanians to fight Israel, right? But what happens the day after? Who are those guns going to be pointed at when everything is done? The Jordanians, the Jordanian security system, right? And that's the problem. That's why this is a red flag for the Jordanians. So nevertheless, very interesting, right? But we'll see what happens. I don't think the Iraqi militias are strong enough, right, to do something crazy like overthrow the king, right? But nevertheless, they're flexing their muscle, that's for sure.
Yeah, this concerns me in the long run. I think in the short run, the militias are swimming uphill, but in the long run, or swimming upstream, but in the long run, it's the Jordanian government. There's a lot, and as this war continues, there's going to be a lot of anger and a lot of, you know, Jordanians who are going to be sympathetic to the message. And you're absolutely right, Joe. What happens next? Do they point those guns at the Jordanian government? That would be the absolute worst outcome of all of the things that could happen. That might be one of the worst things that could happen for the Israeli people, because whatever problems Jordan has been of late, they certainly keep a lid on that problem and, you know, do a adequate job of securing the border, preventing smuggling of weapons and whatnot. If there is a civil war, if there is or the government is overthrown, it's all bets for what happens into the West Bank, because Jordan is the gateway to the West Bank. And that's where my concern lies. Well, Joe, thanks a lot for giving us a quick update here today on Generation Jihad. Always a pleasure to get you on Monday and run a show with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Things are definitely evolving pretty quickly day by day here. So we'll see what we can talk about next time I'm on.
Yep, absolutely. It's never a dearth of topics. We just try to pick the top four or five. Thanks again, Joe. And thanks everyone for listening to today's episode of Generation Jihad. Just a reminder, you can listen to us on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe to Generation Jihad and leave us a review, preferably a positive one, but only if we earned it. Thanks again, and we'll see you all again real soon.